Facebook page. This is WGTDHD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring, and today we're going to be talking about how our communities work to keep the neighborhoods vital, and particularly older neighborhoods, I think it's fair to say. Today we have John Morrissey, who is the Director of City Inspection for the City of Kenosha, and Matt Radzik, who is the Manager of Racine Neighborhood Services. Welcome to the program today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having us on.
I really want to get into it by talking about the overall goals of your departments, but we'll be getting into some of the broader issues that are really facing the neighborhoods in a few moments. But perhaps, Matt, you'd like to start with what Racine's goals are for working with the neighborhoods.
Thank you. Well, I'm the manager of the Neighborhood Services Division of the City Development Department at the City of Racine. And our goal primarily is to make sure that our neighborhoods provide safe, sanitary, and affordable living spaces within buildings and also neighborhoods, in a wider context outside of the buildings, living environments for Racine residents. And that's we have a number of different initiatives and different funding sources that we use to further those goals. Primarily, we oversee the use of federal community development block grants and home investment partnership funds. And we use those to, as I mentioned, further our goal of creating and maintaining, which is very relevant mm-hmm. to older neighborhoods, creating and maintaining affordable housing, and also creating safe and healthy living environments for Racine residents.
Great, and looking forward to hearing about more of those specific programs.
Thank you.
John?
Yeah, so I guess the overall goal, if somebody said what's our overreaching goal, it would be compliance with the code, the electric code, the building codes, the city ordinances. That's our goal here. It's not to punish people, but we all know that individual residents can change a neighborhood dramatically. So we really are focusing on making sure your house is painted, making sure the trash is picked up, you know, that the handrails and stuff are in place. So it deals, again, I think a lot like Racine, too. We want to make sure that those areas stay affordable and livable for the people that are there. And I know we've talked, or we'll be talking a little more about who we work with, but there has been a lot of cooperation since I've been there with the police department and other city departments, so we can all make sure we're on the same page. But our ultimate goal is to make sure the neighborhoods are safe, number one, in our context, in the code violations, make sure, you know, that they're not missing safety things and things like that. So that's going to be our main focus.
I think one of the issues is you both have big cities. It's not like the two of you can go and sit in your car and drive around from house to house. So in just a general, again, overview, I don't expect you to tell me every single staff person that you have, but how do you approach this goal?
Sure. Well, at the City of Racine, we have a number of different inspection teams. Our building department has building inspectors and also the uniform neighborhood, it's the unit,
sure,
abbreviation for it. I don't work with them every day, but the unit inspectors are inspectors who go out and really try to make sure that habitability violations outside of living quarters are rectified. So that could be weeds, tall grass, snow and ice, those types of violations. And that's, I think, about five or six inspectors that we have that really work with those aspects of the inspection program that we have. And we also have inspectors out of our public health department who really work primarily with living conditions within structures. And they will respond to complaints regarding lead-based paints, pests, or other health violations, also related to, you know, lack of electricity, lack of, you know, different types of running water. So it's really, it's a very cross-departmental initiative that we have at the city, working among different departments. I don't personally oversee any of the inspectors, but when we use our federal funds to help try to create affordable housing, maintain affordable housing, we rely on their input very heavily.
So there is a lot of cooperation.
Exactly.
I know in the city of Kenosha, fairly recently, there was a change where the city inspection department became its own department. Could you talk about that a little bit in terms of answering the same question about how you go about doing this work?
Yeah, so in 2011, they actually combined city inspections with city development, and then in 2020 here, January, they split them back in this budget year to have a director of city development and a director of city inspections. And I think the difference is there is so much development going on in the city of Kenosha that they were getting bogged down and there just wasn't the leadership that they needed for the inspection department. So we have a total of 8 inspectors. 4 are what we would call property maintenance inspectors. So they're the ones who will go out and they'll deal with anywhere from bed bug complaints to rodents to peeling paint to safety issues. And then I also have the building inspectors, the commercial building inspectors, the electrical inspector, and the plumbing inspectors. So all of those fall under what we do, and then our department, City Inspections, issues all of the permits. So the occupancy permits, the building permits, the plumbing, electric, whatever they might be. So the coordination, and Matt had mentioned some about, you know, the sidewalks and things. So ours is a little different down here. That's all public work. So how it works here is anything that is in the public right-of-way, so from the sidewalk out technically to the center of the street, that is all public work. So they're responsible to pick up all of that garbage, to clean the sidewalks, to do whatever those issues are. What we're seeing down here is a lot of people will put their bulk waste out and they don't call in for the pickups and then it sits there. So part of when I was asked to take this position from the mayor was that's going to be our major focus. So we are way over now. I think last year by this time we had like 18 trash complaints in city inspections, and we're well over 200 and some already this year, and I put in another 34 before I came here. So that is the major focus. So again, we're going to continue with all of the housing violations, you know, but the trash, the debris, the garbage, that is going to be a huge focus. And we are streamlining that process to you will be issued an order to clean it up. You'll have 7 days, and if not, we are going to then have our city crew or city contractor clean it up. You'll be charged that cost, which will go to you, your property taxes if you don't pay it, but you'll also be issued the first reinspection fee of $72, and then it goes up to $90 and $180 and then $360. So they can accumulate, especially for some of these individuals who just don't seem to want to take our advice and clean that stuff up.
And I can't emphasize enough, exactly like you said, solid waste issues in neighborhoods present such a livability concern. And I can't specify, you know, the numbers, but I'm willing to bet the solid waste complaints that our chief building inspector receives are very similar to the numbers that you get. And I definitely understand, and I want to certainly emphasize it's a concern in Racine as well.
I find that really interesting that it sounds like it's something that putting a different focus on. And where does that come from? The leaders, I know you each have mayors. I mean, have they indicated to you that you got to get this stuff off of the right-of-ways? We want our communities to look better. I mean, where does this come from? Or is it just surrounding neighbors calling in complaints?
So it comes from everywhere, but I think the direction now comes certainly from the mayor's office and the city council. That was kind of their mandate to me when I took this job, is that was going to be a major focus. It's a huge change for my inspectors. That wasn't one of their major focuses. But we get citizen complaints on a daily basis as well, and they can range from garbage, debris, and trash. They can range from housing violations, again, such as peeling paint. In Kenosha, a lot of people are afraid to make those complaints, fear of retaliation and stuff. So we have a aldermanic ticket system is what we call it. So they can contact their alderman, and then that complaint comes through their alderman. So that takes away some of that fear. Certainly we would tell them, you know, if there's ever any retaliation, to make sure they let us or know the PD know. But so that really is where it's coming from. I mean, it's being driven from the top down here, and I think the inspectors in Kenosha understand that this is a priority now to clean up that portion of it. We're going to continue with the housing, but the debris and garbage is a main focus right now.
In Racine, have you seen any changes over the past couple of years in how things are being addressed?
Well, I think one of the major changes that we've recently undertaken at the city of Racine is with the passage of the rents ordinance. And that took place in November of last year, and that was an ordinance that was spearheaded by the mayor's office and Vicky Selko, our manager of strategic initiatives, and it's really geared towards addressing a lot of the, sort of taking a little bit of a different approach, the living conditions in rental units within the city of Racine, and taking some proactive steps to protect renters and ensure that they're living in safe, sanitary, and decent units within the city. And we looked at a number of other communities when crafting that ordinance, and recently passed the Neighborhood Stabilization and Enhancement District as a component of that, which allows inspectors in the city of Racine to do limited proactive systematic inspections within that district. And there's a number of other sort of again, more landlord tenant related initiatives that are baked into that ordinance, but that really has been the driving force of the newer directions of in particular housing inspection within the city of Racine.
One of the issues I've heard some people say is that only an inspector could be allowed into a rental property only if the owner okayed it or if there is a signed lease agreement with the renter. Is that the case in Kenosha, in Racine, or can a systematic, how would an inspector come into a home, I guess, into a rental unit?
And typically, most of the, and right now, since we haven't really initiated any of the systematic inspections yet, all of the inspections are complaint-based, and that would be dependent on the tenant coming forward with a complaint to a city inspector.
Okay.
Under the systematic inspections, that the tenant would be able to authorize the inspector to enter the unit and perform the inspection.
Okay.
Yeah, so in Kenosha we have the NIP program, the Neighborhood Inspection Program, and a section of the city, we normally have four inspectors, so we have four sections that do that. But the majority of that, and it's very similar to the systematic thing, those are exterior inspections only. So those are the housing inspections. The complaints to get into residents are exactly that. They have to come through somebody who has knowledge. Again, having worked at the KPD, I have a good relationship there with the chief, and we have started now seeing complaints coming in from them, which I have asked for. We have a form to send it, and we can then use that officer's observation because they were lawfully somehow in that residence. So we've had just three forms sent over Friday night there of filthy conditions that we're working with. So how we'll handle that is we will initially send an inspector out. They will attempt to work with the people. If they refuse to let us in, then we will apply for an inspection warrant, and we'll go through that process. But we're going to involve social services or aging, depending on, you know, what the issue is and what the conditions are when you get in there. There's a lot of things that I think people would like to see done that we can't. So hoarders is an example. That there's just not a lot you can do unless it becomes a safety issue. But yeah, so our systematic system here is more exterior based. The complaints to get in, but as Matt said, yes, we need some person who has legal authority to allow us into that residence, whether it be the owner or a tenant or an occupant. So even if the tenant wouldn't want to let us in, as long as the owner gives them enough notice, we could get in there. And we've had both. So we've had tenants come down and complain. Bed bugs is a huge issue for whatever reason. No hot water. The heat isn't working, those things. But we've also had owners come in and want to know how we can assist them in getting into the things. So, you know, the civil issues with that, and property rights is a, even to me, you know, I mean, I own my own home, and I don't expect the government to be able to come just simply into my house, but there does have to be some kind of rules and regulations that make sure that it is livable for the people that are there. So that's how we do it in Kenosha.
Okay. It kind of begs a question. You've talked about the trash on the right-of-ways being an issue in both communities, and both are trying to address that. And would you, is it rental properties that seem to draw the most attention or owner-occupied when it comes to documented inspection requests?
So I would have to clarify, so if we're talking about trash, debris, and garbage, that kind of stuff, it is a majority of the rental units. When it comes to the housing violations, such as peeling paint or the steps falling apart, the handrails not proper, the gutters, the roof, I would say that's probably evenly split or probably more into the homeowner, because not that they're treated different, but when the... It's a landlord-tenant. To me, that's a business. Mm-hmm. They need to operate differently. They're getting paid for that. So we work with everybody that we can, but there has to be some limitations on that. But I would say if we're talking about the garbage and the bulk wakes pickup, that certainly is rental properties. But if it's the other things, again, I would say that's evenly split or probably even more towards the homeowner.
And I would definitely agree in Racine. I think that's absolutely been our observation as well. Yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on there.
We talked a little bit about the NIP in Kenosha. In Racine, are there regularly scheduled, like a certain district of the city get some extra attention for exterior inspections, or is it operated a little bit differently?
Well, it is operated a little bit differently. And again, our chief building inspector would be more of the exact equivalent in Racine, and he would be able to, you know, maybe provide a little bit more complete answer. But I do know that a lot of the inspectors, in particular the unit inspectors at the city of Racine, do have designated areas, but I believe they're more split up by aldermanic districts, so that there isn't, you know, a particular focus on certain areas. The Neighborhood Stabilization and Enhancement District that I mentioned, that is a focus on particular areas in the city of Racine that we used data that we generated regarding the amount and severity of code issues throughout the city to sort of draw that map and identify where we want to do some proactive inspections and try to get ahead of the curve on where some of these interior and potentially exterior violations may be originating.
And let's just briefly talk about what happens when you inspect, you find a problem, I assume you documented, then what?
So again, it certainly depends on what that problem is. So I think I'd already mentioned it, but with our trash, you will get an initial notice, and you have 7 days to clean that up. If not, we'll do it. Normally with a housing violation, unless it's a safety issue, you will get 30 days to do that. So it depends on what the issue is of whether you need a permit or not, and that kind of changes the whole thing. So to paint your house, you don't need a permit. To put a roof on, as long as there's no decking issues, you don't need a permit. So those things, the initial 30 days will go out. We've changed the practice as of yesterday. It used to be there would be 180 days extension. That's not happening. We've gone to a 30-day extension. And that extension now needs to be driven by the tenant, owner, what we use the word is responsible party, person has to come down and request that, because if it's just simply don't want to do it, that's not an issue. But I think there are circumstances where they don't have the money, and we're willing to work with them, but they have to show now that they're trying. I know Matt had mentioned earlier they've got some programs there. We have those two federal programs. We have a couple other programs that we're working with too. But in the grant program, and I don't know if in Racine, we have a waiting list for our grant program. So that happens to be the issue there. And then there's the majority of them, or at least all of ours, are income-based restrictions. So normally a landlord isn't going to qualify for them because their income and such is higher. But we do offer those programs. We send them, again, through city development. Mike Mackey runs those programs, but again, the grant one has a waiting list, but that doesn't mean we don't want you to call and get on those lists and see what we can do. So we are willing to work with whoever, whether it be a landlord, tenant, or a homeowner, as long as they're willing to show us there's some progress. Again, if it's a safety issue, such as the tenant would call and say the stairs have collapsed or they're missing slats or, you know, handrails, they're immediately fixed, or we're going to tag the house as unfit until it is fixed.
And in Racine?
At least in terms of the inspections, that is very similar to the process that we have in Racine as well. And touching a little bit on some of the programs that we use to try to assist where cost is a bit of an issue. We also have some very limited grant programs, particularly related to code violations. But those, I believe, are up to only about $5,000. For larger repairs, we actually have a revolving loan fund that the city of Racine operates. And I've worked in communities in the past that also have grant programs, and we sort of feel like a revolving loan fund allows us to stretch our money a little bit further. We might not be able to reach people at the very, very low income levels with a revolving loan fund due to the repayment requirements, but it does allow us to sort of maintain a pool of funding that we can use to help both homeowners and landlords to rectify code issues and make repairs on their properties.
I find that kind of interesting, because it seems you have a lot of different categories. You've got some people who might be just lazy and not fixing, or you had mentioned hoarders, that it's just they can't get to it no matter how much maybe they want to. And then you've got situations where you've got absentee landlords, and then you've got situations with elderly people who really just don't have the wherewithal to take care of it. And you have young families who, again, their money's going 20 different ways. How do you discern which ones are just too lazy and really need your help? And how do you get them to the right people?
I think that's a very good question, and it's a very tough one to answer. So it really comes down to the cooperation from those individuals to come in and make their case to us. And again, that's what we've implemented, is they have to show us why they're there, because I think those are all very valid things. There are individuals, and again, I don't know if Racine has reinspection fees as we do, or court cost, if we issue them a citation or issue them a summons. And my theory is, if we issue those reinspection fees or citations, that money is then going to the courts or wherever, which goes away from whatever, and if their issue was they couldn't afford it. So those are the decisions that are made. So it really does come down to that individual being very upfront, honest of why they can't do it. Or I've been working with a guy with some steps. You have 15 days to take the permit, you have 15 days to show me that you've got a contractor, and then we'll go out from there. And as long as they're meeting those goals and guidelines of working with us, and again, if they're not safety issues, we're willing to do that. Safety issues, we just can't, of course. But that really is how it is. You need to show the initiative that you understand it's an issue and that you're going to work with us. And there are just some who are not going to. As we talked about, eventually those charges, whether they're reinspection fees, will get put on as special charges and go into property taxes, and that is a long process. And that's where neighbors have a very tough time understanding. Again, going back to my previous thing, it was like drug houses. You always had to build that full case before you could shut them down, and it's tough for neighbors to understand that whole thing, just as it is in this position of, we don't have enough. I can't. There's a house in town by Lincoln Elementary. I think it is the worst house I've ever seen in the city of Kenosha, and if I had my way, I'd put a fence around it and condemn it. That's how bad I think it is. And we just don't have those types. I mean, property rights are significant for a reason, and they need to remain there. Again, I'm a property owner, have been, but those are the tough things. But if you don't show me any initiative that you're not willing to work with us, you're not going to get much back from me.
And I know our approach at Racine is very similar. We're often, willing to work, again, with the exception being health and life safety issues. Mm-hmm. If a property owner is, communicating with us and, shows some level of initiative, then, that's something that we would be willing to work with them. But, in many cases, we also do get, some potentially absentee or out-of-state property owners who, violations letters might go out many, many times, and we don't get anything in response. And that can be a little bit of a different scenario. And again, yeah, property rights prevail in that instance, but it does. We as a municipality also have a responsibility to the rest of the neighborhood to try to enforce the codes that we have that we require property owners to abide by.
And that brings up a very good point on the landlords that are not from here. It doesn't even have to be out of state, just quite frankly, if they're not in the city. It's very tough. If we recently had an article in the Kenosha News, and it was about garbage. We had sent the notices, and it went to somewhere, and they sent it somewhere else, and pretty quick, the citizens want to know why we didn't clean that up. And it's trying to be fair to everybody and make sure that they receive the notices. Again, part of it was the weather there. We couldn't do it, but that's a good valid point of it becomes much tougher. I don't want to put Matt on the spot here, but I've been kind of following what they're doing with their new program up there. This rent program is all new. I looked at the map and stuff, and we, meaning Kenosha, are going to follow that very closely to see how that works. I know there's a fee they have to pay the landlord tenant, so I don't know if that's something he's wants to talk about, but we're going to follow that very closely here to see how it works, to make sure the court challenges are worked mm-hmm. out and that kind of stuff, because I think it's a very intriguing idea.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. The rents ordinance it really is.
You mentioned it, but
yeah. It has a number of components. I mentioned a little bit about the neighborhood stabilization and enhancement district, where we'll be doing some proactive inspections. But it has a number of other features, and again, delving a little bit more into the landlord tenant arena. It allows for the an escrow payment for tenants who are, and I don't know the ordinance language specifically off the top of my head, but tenants who are living in units that have significant violations, and they want to withhold rent until those violations are corrected, and in those cases, they can pay their rent to the city of Racine in lieu of to their landlord until those violations are corrected. That's one component. We also have a rental registration program that has a set fee that property owners will need to pay to be able to register their property with the city of Racine, and also provide contact information so that we have a living, breathing human who we can contact if there's an issue at the rental property, because in many cases it is just a P.O. box or something that, we'll have on record. And if an emergency happens or something comes up or there's code violations, we want to be able to reach an actual party. And there are a couple of other components, but those are some of the major ones.
that seems to stop just short of licensing, I guess, a landlord. Or is it? Can you call it a license when they have to register?
It is just a registration program. It is not a license.
You can't revoke.
Exactly. Yeah, it's nothing along those lines. It's just a registration of the properties themselves, so that we're aware of where they are, and just some of the details about who is in charge of them.
I think that you've both mentioned the out of town or the P.O. box owners, and I think I don't know if everybody really understands how prevalent that is. It's something I had just heard about not that long ago myself, but I understand there are like these holding companies that are on different coasts, and there's really not a person necessarily behind that P.O. box. Is that, am I categorizing that properly, or?
I think that's a fair statement. It depends certainly on the areas, but I would say back in 2008, 9, 10, 11, when the economy got bad there, there were a lot of landlords from out of state that came in and bought up these properties and continue to own them. So we, again, the trash complaint I had mentioned out by the former Shopko building was exactly that. It just goes to a corporation and a P.O. box in Milwaukee, which got sent to Madison, which got sent to back to a Kenosha address, and it's just you don't have those good contacts. So we are trying, in the city of Kenosha, we have the vacant building registry. That is something that we are focusing on. It's not at the top of my list right now, but we're working on that too, because that helps us when these vacant buildings, again, the commercial ones are certainly the biggest, you know. So recently Shopko closed and Burger mm-hmm. King on 52nd. But to know who we can contact, because recently the police have had a few break-ins at the Burger King, and then they called and we said, well, this is our contact. So that stuff really helps. Again, I don't call it licensing either. It's just, you know, we want to know. So, again, it helps us when you need an occupancy permit, if it's been vacant for more than 180 days, to get into that house, so we know that all the code violations have been cleaned up and that it is fit for occupancy. So we use that program. Again, we have the rent withholding program here in the city of Kenosha too. I don't know that it's ever been used, or certainly it's not utilized very much, but it is something that's on my radar as well. If we continue to have these issues mm-hmm. where I see it's the same individual, we're going to use some of those.
Other programs or agencies or departments that you work with, I know you've each mentioned a little bit of that, but let's just say on a weekly basis, how many different departments do each of you integrate with, and in what way?
Well, we at the City of Racine, again, based in the City Development Department, mm-hmm. We operate many of our inspections out of that department. We interface very closely with the Health Department, who runs a number of other types of inspections, like I said, primarily the interior inspections, but also the Fire Department. They do inspections, I believe, of commercial structures, and we, you know, rely on the information that they generate through their inspections as well. Our police department also, you know, provides us with some important information, not so much in everyday interaction with them, but definitely people who we have connections with. They operate what are called COP houses, community-oriented mm-hmm. police houses, in the city of Racine, and they're often a fixture in our neighborhoods, and they're often a wealth of information about, you know, what different neighborhoods in the city are dealing with. And really, I mean, we do interact within the city with other departments on a regular basis, with the mayor's office, with our finance department, and also with some of our funding partners, in particular with the federal government as well, with the grant programs that we use. I mean, we're very dependent on those programs, and we try to communicate our needs to them on a regular basis as well.
And I would like to talk a little bit more about the funding. So while I find out from John who he interacts with, start thinking dollar figures and who they come from.
So I would say, on a weekly basis, I don't know if I would say daily, but mm-hmm. I'm always in contact with administration, so either the mayor or the city administrator. city development, the police department, the fire department, public works, the assessor's office. So those are people that we deal with all the time, because that all plays into a role. Of course, we deal with outside contractors who clean up stuff for us, so we're dealing with that individual on a daily basis. So there's a lot of cooperation in the city of making sure all these departments are working together, and our goal is the same there. Again, it's depends on what it is, but the majority of those intertwined in, as I said, you know, public right-of-way is Public Works picks it up, but that doesn't mean that when they go there or we go there that the yard isn't full of garbage, because then that's ours. So it becomes a little confusing to the citizen, but if you send in that complaint to us, we will forward it to wherever. If you send that complaint into Public Works, they will forward it to whoever. So there is already that cooperation of those complaints will be forwarded out. So, you know, the aldermen have what we call alderman tickets. They can send in any complaint, and we just said, if you just send them in, we'll figure out where it goes. So, like, the reason we work with the police department all the time is they have the authority to tow vehicles. And I've made it a priority. If you have your vehicles and they're unregistered or a nuisance vehicle, we're going to have them towed. And they have been towing vehicles and tagging vehicles like probably never before, because that's just part of cleaning up that the neighborhood. So, you know, there's almost daily interaction with all of those individuals.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And you mentioned Public Works and the Assessor's Office. Those are also two, you know, vital departments in the city as well, in the city of Racine, that we also interact with quite a bit. Public Works especially. If I didn't mention it before, but we do have the same process with Public Works where things in the public right-of-way between the sidewalk and the street, you know, we rely on them to provide a lot of the information to us in city development of things that are actually happening on in the public right-of-way that we can then use to sort of inform our decisions that take place on private property relating to code issues.
At the start of the program, you each mentioned grants, and you said CDBG, and you get CDBG grants.
Correct.
As well?
Yes, we have those as well.
And are we talking the majority of your funding coming from that source, or?
Not in Kenosha. So there's the HELP loan program, and then there's the CDBG funding, but the city also has a revolving fund similar to what Matt had said in Racine, okay. And I think there's $1 million something. That's put in and replenished each year by the city council based on need, based on whatever. So, you know, if we decide we're going to raise properties as well as fix them, you know, all of that money's in there. So there's again, I would say four major programs. There's other programs too. And we work with the housing department. Federal Housing Department is right next door to us. And, you know, some of the complaints that come in are from individuals that are on housing, and they can be dealt with much better through housing than they can be by us, because sometimes the rules, yeah, are stronger, you know, at the federal level to continue that funding, and that gets the landlord's attention or the property owner's attention more than we do, because if that funding comes to an end, you know, so that's we've got probably the same programs.
Yeah, and that's the partnership with the Housing Authority especially. I think that's its key. They need to make sure to be able to get the vouchers that the property is up to housing quality standards per HUD. And yeah, that it definitely is an important partnership and a window for us into, you know, what a lot of the experiences are in rental units in the city of Racine. So yeah, that is absolutely a key partnership on our end as well. But similarly, we receive about 1.8 million or so in CDBG each year, and about 500,000 or so through HOME. In CDBG, we break up into a number of different, we call them buckets. We use some of which to provide match grants for our revolving loan fund, some of which to assist community-based development organizations in the creation of new housing on vacant lots in the city. Mm-hmm. We also use it for public infrastructure. In the past, we've used it for repaving streets, installing equipment at parks, transit improvements, things like that. And then also for economic development and public services. We view those as being, you know, very, very key parts of neighborhoods as well. And then our revolving loan fund is also it has a similar dollar amount, around $1 million, that we try to revolve with homeowners separate from the annual allocations that we receive from HUD.
Curious about the revolving loan funds in both communities. Is that something somebody could go online, see that it's there, apply for it, or is it something that would be recommended to an individual upon you working with them already because of code violations?
It would be both. We advertise RacineHousingLoans.com pretty regularly, and we encourage anyone who's interested to go to our website there and fill out a pre-application form if you're interested in repairs to your structure. But also, that's something that, we encourage our inspectors to, if you see a situation where you think somebody, maybe benefited from, subsidized financing to fix some of the repairs or fix some of the needs on their structure, we encourage them to also distribute information about that as well.
I'd say it'd be exactly the same in Kenosha. It's on the website. They can contact that. And again, the grant programs are full and waiting list, but we hand them out as well to individuals. But again, that's some of this comes to the property owner asking us again, because there's qualifications. So if I just write an order to paint your house and give you this, and you think, oh, okay, I can get my $7,500 or $5,000, and you don't qualify because of whatever the restrictions. So we don't like to do that either, because I think there's a false hope there that, oh, I can get this money. So we have all the programs there. We mention them, but we also make sure that they understand that we're not saying you're qualified for mm-hmm. any of them. Just these are out there. But something we haven't talked about, and I don't know if it's an issue in Racine, is since I've been in this job, one of the things that we're having a big issue with is our foreclosures that are vacant, and they'll either switch hands two or three different times on us during the process with orders. So it's that's an issue of how to deal with it.
It's absolutely an issue in Racine as well, and that's actually a component of the rents ordinance, is having a partner work with the city to try to flag where bank foreclosures or non-tax related foreclosures are occurring in the city, so that we can try to get a jump on where those are occurring and get an idea of where potential problems could come up in terms of property maintenance issues.
That's interesting. So you're kind of looking at a way of tracking it, because right now it would take somebody living next door saying, this is vacant. What's going on here?
Exactly.
Is that the only way right now you could really?
Pretty much, unless, we get a complaint. But again, then it'll go into foreclosure. So we may have written orders to the property owner, and then those orders, once it goes into foreclosure, have to go to the bank if they take it over and bankruptcy. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And again, I know the normal citizen doesn't care. They just want the problem fixed. But the property rights, again, I think are extremely important for a reason. But those are a lot of things. But we are, similar to what Matt said, trying to make sure we can try and stay ahead of those. And just out today, and Landshark was out doing one, and they said they're going to clean up the mess by tomorrow, which is great to hear. I hope they do. I mean, because otherwise it would be a week or two before we could get that done.
Well, I want to thank both of you today. Obviously, it's a huge subject that we could probably talk about for another hour, given that you both have large communities and they're older communities. And it sounds like you're doing a great job in what you have to work with to try to keep everything moving in the right direction. So I'd like to thank our guests today, John Morrissey, who is the Kenosha Director of City Inspection, and Matt Rejek, who is the Manager of Racine Neighborhood Services.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
It's time when there are concerns about COVID-19. You can get more information on our website, WPR.org, and during our state, national, and international news here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Keep washing those hands, keep them away from the face, and stay healthy. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to Classics by Request on Wisconsin Public Radio.
The breath of world music heard on the road to higher ground reflects and celebrates cultures with the goal of affirming the value of very old inherited sounds next to those steeped in ongoing experimentations, reimagined as hybrids of the old and the new with a call to connect with people near and far. Saturday evening at 7 p.m. Central on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from The Bolt Company, providing professional construction services to customers in a variety of markets nationwide for over 125 years. More about markets served, featured projects, and news at bolt.com.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn.